This is April 15th,
1997.
Yeah. 15 or 14?
No, 14.
14.
Excuse me.
Why is that deadline? Well, that's right, for Texas. And we're at 636 Mission Street in San Antonio.
Yes.
In the home of Olga Peña.
Right.
And she has agreed to do this voluntarily. And you're waiving any rights to your voice and your image and all this because you want this for educational purposes.
Right.
Okay. It's a gift to the University of Texas at Arlington. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. Well, we thank you for taking time to do this. So, why don't you tell us first about your biography? This is who your parents were, who your grandparents were on both sides, where they came from, that sort of thing.
Yeah?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm Olga Peña, Olga Ramos Peña. My maiden name is Ramos, of course. And I was born here in San Antonio, Texas. My parents came from Mexico. My father is from Sabinas Hidalgo, Nuevo León. My mother is from Monterrey, Mexico. And they came to the United States when they were very young. They have third grade education, both of them. That's how far they went in school. Of course, that was in the dark ages. I call it dinosaur time. Anyway, they went only to the third grade. However, they're very intelligent. And my father educated himself through reading. He read encyclopedias. I think he read every book that there is on encyclopedia. And he was a Mason while I was growing up. They became citizens of the United States, I believe in 1937. And I grew up in the West Side on Leona Street, right in the heart of San Antonio. I went to Navarro School, for elementary school, and then I went to George Chandler Harris, and then to San Antonio Tech. While growing up, we lived in a vecindad, and of course, we didn't have plumbing facilities inside, so nowadays, people are lucky to have everything. While I was living in the vecindad, a lot of the people were illiterate, and ever since I was small, I was always trying to help people, some of the elderly and things like that. And if they needed translation or something, they would come to me. For example, there was a gentleman that had gotten hit by a taxi cab, and the lawyer, they had hired a lawyer, and he came to the home. They were right next door. So they called me to go and do the interpretation. And I did. That's all I did. I did not suggest anything or recommend anything. All I did was interpret so that the people could understand what was going on. And there was also some blacks, not in the vecindad, but I grew up going to through dancing school, dancing classes, folklorico. And I met a lady, a young girl that was black, and she was having some problems. And I don't know why she asked me. She told me her story about what she was going through. I don't remember much about the issue, but I recommended certain things. And I call myself a natural born advocate for people that are in need. Mm-hmm. And I feel that. And when I retired, I was working in a program that is geared towards providing education to the drug addicts, to the young children that are missing school and all that. That's a preventive program to prevent them from using drugs and alcohol and things like that. But going back, I did grow up in the neighborhood of the barrio, so I know all there is to know about suffering and being in the barrio where you cannot get an education. I also grew up being segregated. Now, a lot of you do not know the issue or have never been through it, and there's still that going on. The only thing is that they try to disguise it now by keeping you they try to cover it. But I believe that we're smart enough to recognize discrimination. While I was going to high school, excuse me?
I was just going to ask for some years as to when all this is happening, okay. When you were born or when you went to school.
Okay,
or high school.
I was born in 1925.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm 71 mm-hmm. years old, and went to Navarro in elementary, junior high, and I graduated in 1943 from San Antonio Tech.
So in the elementary, it was in the 30s?
Yes.
Was that the time when Eleuterio Escobar and Maria Hernandez were doing demonstrations against the segregation of Mexican kids?
I don't remember.
You don't remember
that?
Because
I was real small then.
I see.
Because I was just starting in school, which would be 6 years old, you know.
Well, let's go back okay. a little further. When did okay. your parents come from Mexico? Do you remember when?
No, I don't know.
Do you remember why?
Just to get for a better life, I guess.
Were they coming away from the Mexican Revolution?
No. They came with their parents. No, they weren't getting away from the Mexican Revolution.
Oh.
My father left because he couldn't, in Sabinas Hidalgo, it's just a little town.
What was his name?
Guadalupe Gutierrez Ramos. Guadalupe G. Ramos.
And your mother?
My mother is Frances Navarro Diaz.
Diaz, okay. Mm-hmm. And their parents? Do you remember, did you know
no,
your
my grandmother, was Maria Diaz, and my grandfather was Martin Navarro.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, my mother's Maria Diaz Navarro. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
And then on your dad's side?
On my dad's side is Guadalupe Ramos, and my grandfather was Carlos Ramos.
You know where they were from?
They were from Sabinas Hidalgo.
Oh, everybody from right there.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, and I visited when I was growing up, Mama used to take me to Sabinas, and then we go to Monterey because we had relatives over there. So that was my vacations going to
yeah.
Sabinas and those places.
What did your dad do and what did your mom do for a living?
Oh, my dad was, mom was a housewife all the time. Mm-hmm. And like I said, she just went to school to third grade.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was, he sold, soda waters or, you know, soft drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a company owned by a Mexicano from Sabinas. There were two companies that were owned by Mexican people that came from Mexico, which was Hippo Size and
oh, yeah.
Dragon Bottling Company.
Oh, yeah.
They were right in the middle of downtown, right there by Corazón de Maria where the expressway is.
Yeah.
Right there. Well, okay, my
So those two companies were owned by Mexicans? Eh?
By Mexicans from Sabinas. Ironically, yes. And my dad worked for one of the places there, and he was a driver. He used to deliver and sell soda waters here to the, and El Mercado and all those areas, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay.
Little corner stores, remember the
mm-hmm.
family
sure.
stores that you could go and charge there. Everybody knew each other, and there was pilon in those days and things like that.
Explain what pilon is.
Pilon was a gratitude because you bought at the same, you were a customer at the same store, you bought at the same store. And at that time, there were stores practically in every corner,
mm-hmm.
which were owned by families
mm-hmm.
that lived in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you could get some items in one store and others in others. But then you got used to just shopping at that particular mm-hmm. store. Another thing that I'm real aware of is also the foods that we ate in those days. You had your people come into the streets with a carreton,
mm-hmm.
the vegetables vendors, and selling their fruits and all their wares, you know,
mm-hmm.
which was fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also the menudero, he had a pole, you know, a long pole with two cans like this. And on Saturdays or Sundays, they'd come by. And that's how you bought your barbacoa and your, if you're aware of Mexican foods, your barbacoa and your menudo. They had buckets and they'd dip it. You come, it came out with your bowl and they filled it up and you paid them. Your vegetables was the same. And of course, to let you know that they were coming, they would, instead of having a bell like the ice cream man now, they would call out, coa, barbacoa, and Verdulero, you know, stuff like that. And you could hear him coming down the street, and he'd go out there. And it's a very interesting and really, it's really an education in itself, knowing where we're at now.
Well,
and all the luxuries that we don't take advantage of, all the things that we don't take advantage of, and the things that are available to the young kids. Education is one of them that I'm always pushing for, because I only went to, I graduated from high school, and then I went to business college.
Drums Business College?
Drums Business College, right. Because I wanted to be a secretary. What a big deal, you know.
Well, it was a big deal then. That's what, that was the aspiration.
At that time, yeah, because, and another thing is,
did your father agree
with money? Pardon?
Did your father agree that you should go to school?
Oh, yes, yes. Like,
he didn't want you to get
married. He was self-educated. No, no. He wanted me to go to school.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Two brothers.
Who are they?
Guadalupe. He changed his name from Guadalupe to Wally. And another one that he's passed away already, Hugo Ramos.
Okay.
And Guadalupe Ramos, Wally Ramos.
And where did they grow up?
They went to school to this at the same.
What did Wally do? Literally.
Wally, okay. Wally was he worked at the sheriff's office. He was a sheriff's deputy.
Oh, sheriff. Okay.
And my brother Hugo worked for Douglas Aircraft in California, because he was in the Navy. And then he liked California and stayed. Okay, went back to California.
This was World War II.
No, that was no. It was a. I don't know which it was. Whether it was Vietnam or the.
Oh, he was much younger than you.
Or? Oh yes, he was younger. I'm the oldest.
Oh, you're the oldest. I see. I see. Okay. Well, that may have been Korea or Vietnam.
Korea, I guess.
Okay.
And Wally was in the. What was that? Green Berets or?
Yes.
Green Berets. He used to. He was a parachutist.
Okay.
He was one of the ones that would get there first.
All right.
You know, look around and all that. That's why he became a sheriff deputy, because he liked that policing and all that.
Okay.
And he retired from there.
When you first went to school, Navarro Elementary. Was it segregated?
Well, there was just a bunch of Mexicans, but the way they practiced segregation, all I knew was Spanish. When I went to school, I had a hard time. I had a very bad accent when I spoke English. I didn't know any English when I went there. But I was very lucky that I got one of the teachers that was bilingual. So she would teach us in both languages. So I got the taste of that, and I knew that it was necessary. For our kids, so when bilingualism came in, you know, the law, I was very happy for the children that it was, because there's a lot of kids that still do not practice English in the home because parents are illiterate in English. So, but the segregation part was that we did not know English. We went to school, and if they heard us speaking Spanish, from the office, you know, the Anglo people were the ones that were running the schools, of course. They'd take a ruler and hit us up. They'd tell you to put out your hands and they'd hit us with a ruler. And I don't mean just a little tap, I mean hard. And we didn't want to speak, so we'd get away from the teachers and everybody to talk our lingo, you know. So it was really ridiculous the way they practiced it. But that's why I say you can. And that, you don't have to be hit with a ruler, you know, when there's segregation, because of the, just with body language, you can almost pick it up, tone of voice, things like that.
And in junior high, what experiences did you have?
Junior high.
Which one did you go to?
Harris. At that time, there was a lot of Anglos there. And now it's, we've taken over. The Mexicanos have taken over.
Did your family move from where they?
No, no. I was in the middle of town. So I could either go to Harris or Lanier Junior. So I went to Tech because it was closed. My dad could take me to school and all that on his truck, in his truck. Because we didn't have a car, we didn't have an automobile.
But you went to Harris first.
I went to Harris, yeah, Junior.
What was your favorite subject?
English.
English.
Believe it or not, and you know why? Because I wanted to learn English so that I wouldn't be segregated. Can you believe
it? And speak without an accent.
Yeah. Okay. And when, as a matter of fact, after I graduated, I went to St. Mary's University just to take English, and that's what I started with. My kids used to make fun of me. You know, Mom, you don't pronounce it that way. They tried to correct me when I spoke, you know. And I still can't speak. I mean, my vocabulary is kind of limited, and I do have not a BA, but an associate's degree from, well, St. Mary's, and of course I got it from San Antonio College. But I did all my English at St. Mary's University. And then I went to SAC, and of course I took psychology then. And that's what my work was like, which I used the psychology a lot.
Well, let's go back to high school. What clubs did you belong to?
The Spanish club, and I was a leader.
How did that happen?
Because of my dancing and being in the Spanish club, and I was, I spoke to everybody, I was very friendly, everybody knew me at school, and anytime there was any assemblies, I always danced.
When did you start dancing?
I started dancing at the age of 8.
Oh, second grade.
Yeah. I could.
Who taught you?
First it was Livia Magnon, and then I went with the San Antonio, the City Recreation Department. And it was Berta Almaguer.
What kind of dancing?
Mexican dancing.
Folklorico.
Folklorico. Me comenzaron con el jarabe tapatio, and that's the hardest. Chapanecas, jarabes, tapatio, espuelas, the whole bit. You name it, I know about over 100 dances.
So you were beautiful and had great legs.
I hope so.
Well, of course you were dancing, you know, all this time, you know, and you're still very beautiful, so no wonder you were very popular, but mm-hmm. You must have figured something out. I mean, being popular and being beautiful is something that kind of comes naturally. Being political is another, and that's by choice.
Well,
so you got to be political, right?
Well, I got to be political because, as I said, I wanted to help. Mm-hmm. I wanted to help.
When did you first realize that?
When I was about 14.
How
like
did that
I
happen?
Said, because the people wanted to, needed my assistance and stuff like that. And then I started learning that, because we were renting. We didn't own our home. And the person that owned the houses was Bertetti, John Bertetti. And he worked for the post office, postal services. And he was very close to, what was his name, the postmaster here in San Antonio. I don't remember his name, but anyway, he was very close to him. And whenever he'd come to collect the rent, he'd stop and talk, and he was always talking about being a friend to this person and to the Postmaster General, and he was very political, so I started kind of picking up.
So he would be talking to you, or talking to your father, or to your mother?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So although Mama wasn't educated, but she always took an interest. As a matter of fact, my father and mother, I told you my father was a Mason,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and we belonged to all the clubs, and what I mean is social clubs. He didn't belong to the LULACs, but he belonged to the, what was it?
Orden Hijos de America?
Well, when I danced, I used to see a lot of the clubs, that, like the fraternities.
Uh-huh.
Get the care, you know, that have the insurances and all that.
Ah, los lacheros.
Los lacheros.
Okay. Miguel Hidalgo.
All of that. So I was always in that environment. So something was clicking there already, you know, because I went to the organizational, because I did what you call spot dancing.
What is that?
That means that I didn't work in a place like Catina or nothing like that, you know. I worked whenever there was conventions and they wanted entertainment and things like that.
I see.
I went, as a matter of fact, we'd go to Laredo every Washington's birthday and stuff like that, when they celebrate them. To the school there, to dance at the school.
Now, this is a school sponsored project, or are you doing this with some other club? No,
when we went to the Laredo, it was with a group de aquí, íbamos allá, and it would, they would hold their meetings or their fiesta at the school there in Laredo.
Would your dad and your mom talk politics?
My mom and my dad would talk about, you know, in the Masons, I think they talk about the stars and the astrology. And or astronomy. And he would always point out to us about the moon and the stars and tell us about the planets and the whole bit. So I've got a lot of stuff here and there. And then Dad was, he always had people at the house, fiestas. He was a leader. I mean, he'd bring people to the house and Christmas. Mama was the best cook there is. And of course she made her tamales. And I haven't forgotten any of those wonderful foods that we, you know, tamales and the other people, our youngsters do not know or, and our Anglos are taking advantage of our foods and and selling them, because we did not teach our kids how to to keep up the culture, the different foods, to recognize all those things. Anyway, my dad was in clubs like the social clubs, like I was saying, and he was we'd go to the dances, and of course we'd to go dancing for recreation. That was a recreation. And they'd take me all the time because I was young, and then I became a member of some of the social clubs myself. And I was popular because everybody knew me in that clubs because I belonged to them. And I got into it because of my dancing. I danced for the, like I said, spot shows. So I got a feel, okay, during World War II, I was very young. I was still in high school. And they'd provide at the military bases. They had, of course, a lot of shows for the military. And I'd go to those places like Fort Sam Houston and all that. So I got a taste of that, you know, going to those things. And I met a lot of the other people that would come and entertain. And I met some of the people that were in show business in Mexico that came to Laredo when we went to the Laredo shows. Let me see what else. Okay, my daddy belonged to the Monte Carlo, and of course they chose their queens and all that, just like the Feria de las Flores, that kind of stuff.
Is that an organization?
Organization, Monte Carlo. They had the debutantes. You know, they'd come out as the debutantes and stuff like that.
Were you one?
No. My daughter, one of my daughters went through the Monte Carlo as a debutante.
Later on.
Later on. So, but at the time I didn't, but I went to the dances and I knew a lot of people there.
In high school, did you belong to other clubs other than the Spanish club? Or?
No.
Did you get elected to office or anything?
No, nothing like that, no. I was too busy dancing and having friends. I still see people. As a matter of fact, Saturday, I saw two girls that I went to school with.
That's
and right away, they come and whenever I go out, I don't care where I'm at, I always see somebody that knows me. And they'll come up to me, hey, Olga, either through my growing up, through my dancing, through politics, and those kind of things. But I was always there. Andaba de metiche. And I hate to be cooped up in the house.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you work? Other than the house?
No. What my work was later on when I became a little bit older, when I was going to drums after high school and that, I worked, that was my work, my dancing. They would pay me later because I came in, became professional, and of course nothing. In those days they'd pay me like $5 a dance, which was a lot. And that money, because my dad and my mom were real poor, you know, and selling soda waters in those days. Well, the cat, I think the bottle of root beer and stuff like that was about 5 cents or something like that, a bottle. Mm-hmm. And we never went on welfare. Mm-hmm. Never. My dad would say that he was able to provide pobremente, but he had a lot of pride.
So when you went to secretarial school, were you still living at home?
Oh, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after that, I worked with a manufacturing company, Perez Manufacturing Company, who had, who made dresses, exclusive dresses, which went to, of course, you didn't have your outlets, you know, your factory outlets. You just bought in the store. And they provided to the Sackowitz and Joski's here in San Antonio, it was Joski's. And then Sackowitz, Foley's in Houston, and stuff like that, you know.
But it wasn't with the Perez label, it was with Sackowitz or Foley or something.
No, it was with the Perez label.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but wow. It was exclusive.
Uh-huh.
And they would put their advertisement with that, and it was just those stores that you could just get those dresses or that merchandise at that particular store. That's the way they used to sell.
What happened to that business?
Oh, they went down. Mm-hmm. Mm. He closed up. Mm-hmm. Early.
So early. After
I worked there for about 2 years. And after that, I got married.
Who did you marry?
Albert Pena.
How did you meet him and why did you marry him?
I was working at Perez. And that was right across from the San Antonio Express. The factory was right there. And I was walking to lunch, to go get my lunch at lunchtime, and I saw a friend of mine coming out of one of the buildings there, and he says, "Oh God, I'm so happy to see you," and this and that. He told me he was marrying this girl, and then I went to school with. And he says, "I want you to stand at my wedding," and so. I said, "Sure, I'll be very happy to." And he said, "Well, come on upstairs, I want you to meet someone." And it was Albert.
That's who he
wanted
to
me to stand with him.
Okay.
And I said, "Well, I have my boyfriend, I can stand with him." And he says, "No, I want you to stand with, would you, do you mind?" I said, "No, that's okay." So I stood with Albert. And I just stood with him at the wedding. There was nothing, you know. I wasn't interested in him or anything.
What changed your mind?
He was persistent.
Terco.
Terco, yes. So I finally ended up marrying him.
How long did you all have a courtship?
About 6 months.
And did he do the right thing? Did he come ask for your hand?
He was...
Promise everything?
Yes, well, yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. What did your dad think of that?
He said whatever I wanted.
So. Was Albert a lawyer already by then?
Oh, no.
Just starting?
Or? No. He had come back from the war, World War II, mm-hmm. and he was a veteran. Mm-hmm. He had very recently gotten out of the service. Mm-hmm. He was in the Navy, mm-hmm. and he had just gotten out of the service, and he was at St. Mary's. He was going to St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm. What year is it?
That was 47. That was around... About this time of the year, no, earlier, about February of 47.
Is this when Henry B. Gonzalez is trying to integrate the theaters and these things that he's doing in the late 40s? Do you remember?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember any of that. I remember Henry when he was city council and from there on, you know.
Okay.
And of course, that's when I married Albert and he was going to St. Mary's and at that time there was discrimination in St. Mary's.
How was it?
Another person that was going there, Julio Reyna, he says, "Hey, remember when they discriminated and this and that?" Albert didn't finish there. We had to move to Houston. That was after I married him, of course, and all. But he was going to law school there at St. Mary's. And he dropped out. Because of discrimination, or something happened that he got out of it.
You don't know who it was?
No. He's real smart, so I don't know that that was, whether grades was the reason or what, mm-hmm. but I don't remember that. Anyway, he got out and he was going to quit because his father was going, his father was a lawyer already, Albert's father. And Albert said that, I was, of course, I married him in September of 47. And he got out from school and he wasn't going to go back. And his father was going to open up a pawn shop right there where that big courthouse is, mm-hmm. in the center of San Antonio by Main Plaza, mm-hmm. where the San Fernando Cathedral is. Mm-hmm. That was, my father-in-law had bought that building and he was practicing law there. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to put a place him in a pawn shop there. And he says, you'll make a lot of money and stuff like that. And Albert says, well, honey, you know, Dad says that he can put us up and he can help me start a business. And it's a very good business. And I said, no, you wanted law. Don't you want to be a lawyer? And he he didn't want to pursue it. And I said, well, you could go someplace else. And I kept insisting, Eterca. And I made him go to law school. Well, I didn't make him, but I mean, I convinced him, let's say. I convinced him.
And that's when you all moved to Houston?
Yeah, we moved to Houston.
Mm-hmm. And he went to the University of Houston or
no,
Texas
Southern? No, he went to the Texas Southern, but then he took some courses uh-huh. also. I think just for one or two at the law school there.
Tell me a little bit about Albert's parents and
Albert,
his father, where did they come from and mother?
His father came from Laredo. He's Amendares. As a matter of fact, I think he was kin to the Amendares, the movie star.
Uh-huh.
And primos hermanos.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the fachas igual que Pedro Amendares.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved to San Antonio when he was young also.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to deliver for a pharmacy, deliver the medications for on a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up the hard way too. There were no grants, no nothing. This is why I said earlier mm-hmm. in the interview that kids do not take advantage mm-hmm. of what is available
mm-hmm.
For the education. And he used to sponsor dances at La Gloria, little places where you could get certain amount of people that you could make money. And he'd hire a band and he'd put on some dances, you know, sponsor the dances. And he made money doing that to go to school, to pay for law school.
Mm-hmm.
And during the day, he'd work for the pharmacy trying to deliver,
mm-hmm.
for drugstores, deliver medication. And then he'd go to school at night. And I think he was some of the first graduates with Weber School of Law here in San Antonio. I think that was the only law school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I learned that because he used to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting man. Also, he belonged to the LULAC.
Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law. And of course we were struggling, Albert going to school, and then I had Bill, my son, my first born, who was Bill Pena, and we were, he was a baby when we moved to Houston, and there was a lot of discrimination in Houston. Worse, they didn't even have Spanish, Mexican food, we couldn't find Mexican food. No Spanish music, casi nada. Yo estaba acostumbrada that I could turn my radio on
sure.
to the Mexican music, you know. I still, if you get in my car and I turn my car on, I've got Mexican music.
What station?
La Tejana, la...
So you listen to Tejano music, not Mexican music?
No, this is not the Tejana. No, I have, as a matter of fact, we have people that have a radio station on Albert's side. And that's all Tejano.
De
Los
Dávila.
And I like it, but
De
Los Dávila.
K-E-D-A.
But I, La Queda,
mm-hmm.
K-E-D-A. Y and I like it, but I like the others because I like to hear the variety, you know, of the Mexican. Maybe because of my background, mm-hmm. because of my dancing and the songs that I came up with and all that. Because I had an uncle on my father's side that was a baritone, and he had a voice education, and he used to sing in the in operas, mm-hmm. Mexican operas. He had a teacher here, right around here in this barrio, Bononcini. Madame Bonancini, and she used to teach dance and opera, mm-hmm. and he was an opera singer. So I grew up with that kind of music, and my dad can sing real well too, or he could, not anymore. He could sing, and they both would sing and things like that. My dad never went professional, but my uncle did.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Albert, and you had a baby boy, Bill.
Bill.
And by that time he's become a lawyer, no? Because he finishes in Houston and comes back here. When did y'all decide to come back here?
Okay, when we came back, well, they offered Albert a lot of positions over there because he had some friends there.
In Houston.
Mm-hmm. No, in Pasadena.
Uh-huh.
In Pasadena, but they were going to practice law in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
But we were living in Pasadena because it was too high in.
Mm-hmm.
In Houston, the rents and all that, we couldn't make it with a baby. And so we moved to Pasadena because he met this man who was a mayor then in Pasadena. And he got us into the housing mm-hmm. there. And we lived in the housing projects there.
Mm-hmm.
We were the only Mexicans there. And as a matter of fact, they told Sam that the mayor, they told him that they didn't want any Mexicans there. And Sam got us in anyway. And then when we left, they cried because we were leaving. We made such good friends with everybody. Everybody loved us. And I don't know what they think about the word Mexican. People are so, they don't take the time to find out who we are
mm-hmm.
and that there's good people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they think, you know, they just, I don't know. They just think that we're nothing. And. Mm-hmm. Just like the blacks, you know, they just categorize and that's it. Everybody's bad, everybody's this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's a bandido and caballo con pistola, and we're not. Am I making it too long?
No, take your time. We got plenty of tape. I even brought an extra one, yeah.
Oh my God. You can cut it, you can edit.
Okay, well.
Anyway, I had Bill and we lived in Pasadena, and they wanted to have Albert stay there. But when we left, he said, we're going to come back because I'm going to help my people. And it was ironic, because maybe that's why I married him, because we had the same thoughts. Because remember I said earlier that I helped people in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and there was other things that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I got in trouble at school, my mother wouldn't go and advocate for me. I had to fight my own way.
Mm-hmm.
When my brothers got in trouble and they wanted mom to come, it was Olga. Mm-hmm. When my cousins got in trouble and they called for their mother, my cousins would send me, tell Olga to go. I'll get my prima, and they'd call me, hey. I still get calls from friends, I still get calls from family. Hey, what do I do in this case and that? I've always done that. I don't know it. I don't know why, but anyway, okay. I've always done that. And so, he says, I'm going to help my people, so we're going to come back. I said, great. But by the time he got through at law school, which wasn't long, because he graduated, I think, in 51 or 52. And here we left. I think it was about a year or two that we stayed there. And they wanted him to stay out there, Sam and another, some other people that practicing law there. And he says, well, what do you say? And I said, no, let's stick with the issue. You said with our plan, you said you were going to go back and help the people, so we're going to go back and help the people. I don't want to stay here. And so, again, I convinced him to come over here. And so we moved to San Antonio. And he started practicing law with his dad.
Where'd you live?
On Palmetto. That's a duplex on Palmetto. It's down Denver Heights. Out here on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So he started practicing law with his dad?
With his dad, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was, and his brother. So it was Peña, Peña, and Peña.
Who was the brother?
Richard Peña.
Richard Peña.
Mm-hmm.
Another lawyer.
another lawyer.
Is Albert the youngest of the group or the middle?
No,
or the
Albert is the oldest.
The oldest.
Albert is the oldest, yeah. I went to school with his brothers, with a young brother, with Richard and Tony.
I see.
Albert was the older one.
And are they still around? Are they still alive? In the area?
Well, yeah, well, Tony's in California and he has 2 degrees. He's he worked with Kelly Field because he was, he got a, I believe, engineering degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a law degree in California.
I see. Okay.
So I think he's retired from the company where he was working, and he's a lawyer now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In his retirement years. And Richard, of course, left his law practice.
Okay. Well, tell us the names of the children you had so we can get that out of the
way. Okay. I have William Albert Pena. And
that was the first one?
Yeah, that was my first one. And then Sandra Francis Pena, and that's a girl. I had girls from there on. And then Mary Magdalene Pena, and then Olga. Another Olga, and I didn't want to name her Olga because that would be, you know, that's confusing. And well, it isn't, but I mean, there's other names. And I have a granddaughter Olga, so that's why, I knew throughout. Because I've seen families where all of them are the same name. You know, you have to start numbering them, and so. When I found out, Albert had already named her Olga. And so she got stuck with the name Olga. And then there's Roxanne, and Maslin.
So it's 7 kids?
No.
5? 6?
6.
6 kids?
6 of them. Okay. Bill is the only boy.
Well, was Albert married before?
Yes.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay.
And Albert had been married during the war.
That's the other Albert,
Albert the
third.
Yeah.
Okay.
Albert the third.
Right. Okay. Well, tell me about how he helped his people and how you helped your people.
All right. He got, we were on Palmetto, then we moved to Hermine. And on Hermine,
that's in the south side still.
No, it's the north side.
Oh, Hermine is in the north side?
Yeah.
Okay.
Off of West Avenue.
Okay.
Now the expressway cuts right through that, where we had moved. And we started tagging around with different people, and of course it was in the firemen and things like that, and then they were in the unions. So really the unions more and the working class, trying to help the working class, and that's what we said, we were going to help our people. So we started going to precinct conventions. We'd go vote, we'd see who was running, who was a better person and things like that. So we really started in politics together, you know, Albert and myself. But like my background was what I said, and Albert's was with his father and all of that stuff. And on the groups, I was aware of the LULACs and all that because of my father's being in clubs too. And we'd go to LULAC dances and, you know, Monte Carlos and the whatever. And then I became. So that's how I got into that, knowing about the different things. Of course, by that, at that time, the GI form wasn't around, the American GI form. That came later. But anyway, we started going to the precinct conventions and started meeting all of the people that were involved in politics. We got to go to the convention, both of us, and we liked what we saw, both of us. I loved it. I still do. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to the conventions, and I got real interested in it. So I started getting into clubs. I got into the Democratic Women. The first Mexican got into the Democratic Women.
That was you. That was you.
Yeah. And it was, they were holding it across from the Alamo, right across from the Alamo in Houston. There was a little restaurant there. And I think it was the second meeting that the Democratic women had. I wasn't a charter member, but I was there in the early stages.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the first Mexicana that got in there. And then others from the unions began, that were wives to union guys, started coming in. But very few, you know, very few.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the end, in 73, when the Democratic Party, Democratic women kind of started getting out, was because there was a kind of a, I'll get to that. Mary Esther Bernal was president, but we had a clash, and I think that's what broke it up.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I was the first Mexican to get in there. I was treasurer and this and that. I served in many offices there. But I didn't want to become president. I never strived for it or anything. I just wanted to be loose. I didn't want to be committed by the Molía to follow a certain candidate. And I was in the minority, so I didn't want to get involved like that. I learned all those tricks and knowing the issues and things like that. I began to learn the issues. And so I got very interested in it. And I said, my God, this is a new world. This is how we help the Mexicano. This is how we do things. And I started teaching myself because I was interested. And whenever I was interested in something, I'd just find out about it. I'd get interested and just research it. Go to the person that could tell me or would they do this and that. And so I educated myself in that manner as far as politics. And of course, Albert was doing a different thing in his own. So he did something and I did something else. But then in the combination, it became very effective.
What kind of issues did you get involved with?
Oh, with a lot of issues. Some of them were, okay. The issues that I got involved with was, let me see which were some of them. Some of them were mostly when Albert would, the discrimination was the one that I was,
In the 40s, there was a lot of discrimination and segregation cases
and,
in schools
and
in the area.
Yeah, in the area. And I got involved when Albert would go to the discrimination, to find out about the discrimination cases after he became a lawyer. He did it for the GI Forum and LULAC.
Oh,
free.
They would call him or?
Yeah, he'd volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And they go because of course people would go to the LULAC saying, hey, there's discrimination.
Did you go with him?
Oh, yes.
On these trips?
Oh, yes. And I'd start asking the kids about things.
Well, tell me about one of those trips that you remember.
Okay.
Or a place that you
okay.
went to.
Well, we went to Hondo.
Tell me about that one.
Okay. And Hondo, there was two schools in the first grades, or the elementary grades. And they were segregated. The Mexicans went to one school and the Anglos went to another. Okay. And the railroad tracks that run on Hondo, you can see them from the highway,
right.
Separated them. And we went to the main school, which was the Anglo school, just to find out what was going on. And they had a beautiful playground, cement, arena and all that, real well kept and everything. The rooms were nice, the classrooms, they were nice and everything, with all the conveniences and everything.
They let you in to look at them?
Oh yeah, we went in.
You weren't afraid?
Pardon?
You weren't afraid?
I've never been afraid. I'm still not afraid. And so you have to not be afraid. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of, really? Tiene uno la misma voz, and you can talk poor, bad, indifferent, como te salgan las palabras, but you say it, whatever you have on your mind. And that's the only way to get ahead. If you're intimidated, forget it. You're never going to get ahead. And I don't care who it is, whether you come from the barrio, whether you come from the court, you come from wherever.
Well, in the 40s, you know, in the early 50s, a lot of the police beat up on Mexicans. And,
oh, yes. And we went through a lot of that, too.
You still weren't afraid?
No.
Albert wasn't afraid?
No, he got put in jail.
Where? ¿En Hondo?
No, aquí. Aquí. Uh-huh. Pero en las escuelas, no nos echaban la ley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not at that point, you know.
Well, how did you argue with the school board or the principals or the
superintendent? I did more of the asking the questions. And then on the way back, we discussed things, you know, about what was going on and things like that. About, oh, did you notice the little boy? I went to that little boy and I talked to this little, you know, this little girl and things like that. And to the parents, you know, whenever I was available for the parents, because that he didn't take me to all of those things, you know. I had my kids and my mom and dad, if it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't have been able to do the things I did, because I didn't have a babysitter. We didn't have money. He was just starting. As a matter of fact, he neglected a lot of his law practice because he did a lot of that advocacy, giving free time to investigations and things like that. We even got involved in your thing in Crystal City.
That's true. But that's later. Still in the 40s, early 50s.
Yeah.
What was the best one you remember, or the one that made you feel the best?
Well, the segregations were good, okay? I mean that is important. These are our kids that we're fighting for. And the desegregation is there. The segregation is there. So we had problems. We had a little Chevrolet. And we had a blowout and it had been raining. We got stuck in the mud. And at that time, we could still get a ride, you know, because people weren't afraid. And they stopped and we took the tire. We went to a filling station in Hondo. It was when we went to Hondo. We came back and the person at the garage, they were Anglo and they were very nice. So they were nice people and, of course, he's the bigots too. And they came and they gave us a ride in the truck, and then they fixed the flat and we came home. The one in Mathis is the one that really irked me. I was very angry, and so was Albert. But he was talking to the teacher, and here I was asking things to the questions to the child. Hey, because he was real, that was very noticeable. He was bigger than the little, you know, the others were all about the same size, and this little kid was overgrown. I said, he's either overgrown or he's older. And he had been kept there for a couple of years. And only, and it wasn't because he wasn't learning, it was because the lady was Anglo, and she was keeping him. And mind you, the school was allowing this. So this was really, segregation, major segregation, so that he could do the interpretations for her. And he would interpret whatever there was to interpret. He just, you know, if a kid would ask, well, what does that mean? The little boy would tell her.
He was like a teacher?
Yeah, he was a teacher. He was doing the teaching. He was being all the teaching for the teacher in Spanish. He was a bilingual teacher, really, more so than the teacher. And I feel that when you run into a thing like that, get the qualified teacher. Especially, well, at that time, I don't think the bilingualism was in. But if you're going to teach Spanish-speaking children, you have to know something about it, or you're not going to be able to explain it to them, and it's not our fault. Like, I was one of those.
So what happened in Memphis?
So then that little boy was that old, and that was used in the case, and that was one. And I believe that Albert based it on a Delgado decision, discrimination, which Gus Garcia had fought. Gus Garcia and Carlos Cadena.
Did you know them too?
Oh, yes, both of them. Carlos was the brain, and Gus Garcia was the voice. He was never afraid and things like that to Oh, I know Gus real. I knew Gus very well, very well, both of them. I knew a lot of real good people that had paved the way. I knew Alonso Perales also, who was also one of the first lawyers.
That's was founder a good of LULAC.
Founder of LULAC. Mm-hmm. And there's a book that he wrote. Mm-hmm. I have it someplace. I still have it at my own house. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of materials that I save of things like that. I have newspaper articles and things like that. I need to take my time, and now that I'm retired, but that's what I wanted to do, but I just can't because I have my own.
In another month or so.
Si Dios quiere. Anyway, the discrimination was there, and this happened, and Albert won that case in Memphis. We won the Hondo, and then there was another one. I did go to that one. I went to those two. And when Albert was in, became a public official, I did all the advocacy. You did call him about having problems.
What did he run for?
When he ran for county commissioner, he won.
Oh, that was the first race that he ran?
No, the first one was the, he ran for the legislature against Fratey Seligson.
Tell me about that.
Okay.
How did you all decide that he would do that, and how did you help him?
Oh, I did all, at that point I did not do all of it, but I did a lot of, I didn't run a headquarters. I didn't know anything about headquarters. And I don't think he knew either. So, like I said, we learned together. But what I did, even my dad was helping there. Albert ran independently. Because, of course, also, there wasn't tickets for the legislature. It was just local. Mexicans had offices in the city, like in city. At City Hall and all that, but there was no legislators, state offices held
by Lenny Cano. That was just the very beginning, though, because Henry B. was like the only one.
What? No,
at the beginning.
Henry, Henry was in that, yeah, but he was a city councilman.
Right.
Okay.
And there was nobody on the school board.
No, not on the school board.
Nobody
not
in the county.
Nobody in the county, nobody in the state. None of those offices.
Okay.
So it was really the push, you know.
And at that time, the Democratic Party was just two factions, you know, the liberals and the conservatives. And the conservatives always were winning all the time.
Yeah, that's why it was, I call it the one-party state.
Right, well, it was.
The two parties, the one-party state, mm-hmm. because the conservatives did all the, they won because they would vote in the primaries as Democrats. So they got to choose the Democrats, mm-hmm. which they would choose a conservative,
mm-hmm.
and then they went to the general election, and then they, of course, then that was divided by Republican and Democrat, and they vote Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But if the other one got elected, it was a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it was a big control. There was a controlling force,
mm-hmm.
and we had bigots all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and New Braunfels, they segregated Henry Gonzalez. They wouldn't let him in, and you can imagine all the squealing and the noises that he made, because he's a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learned together, and we were going to the, and that's why I'm always interested, and I'm always asking the youngsters if they know about precinct conventions. That's where the rules, that's where the impact, that's where you can start really building the fires to have your representatives do things that you want to. Let them know that you're aware of issues and things like that. That's so important. So I'm an issues person. I think that is the most important thing in the world. Because if you don't deal with issues, you're not getting any place. You can go vote, but you vote and nobody knows that you voted or who mm-hmm. voted or what.
Mm-hmm.
They know because of the when they start looking at the voters, how many voted, that were surnamed so-and-so or by the precincts and things like that.
Did you have arguments inside the Democratic Women's Organization, or were they all liberals?
No. Because we just talk about issues and things like that, but because there was a lot of labor representation in the Democratic Party, that and we were mostly liberals because it was independent liberal, the unions and the Mexicanas that started coming in with the laborers. And there was with the pipe feeders union and different types.
How about the blacks?
Oh, the blacks?
Nellie Sutton, there wasn't, G.J. Sutton?
No, there weren't. There weren't. There were no blacks in the Democratic women at that time. Okay. Later on, Ruth Jones, who's now Ruth, oh my God, the name escapes me. She's in the legislature right now. She was city council. Oh my God, I'm embarrassed. I can't remember. Ruth Jones, I know her as Ruth Jones, but she's McClendon.
Okay, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Ruth Jones McClendon. Okay, she was the first Negro that got into, no, her and Mrs. Howard. There was a Mrs. Howard. Mm-hmm. But she was, of course, liberal because he was fighting towards her group, you know, the blacks. But those are the two that I remember very well. Mrs. Howard, she was an older lady. And she really did a lot of fighting when it came to the blacks, mm-hmm. but there was not so many issues in there as far as that mm-hmm. was concerned. It was later on when there was more Mexicanas, and they always wanted to control the mm-hmm. The chairmanship. They wanted to hold the chairmanship. We could belong, but we couldn't. But we gave them a good fight with Mary Esther Bernal. She ran, and we all grouped up. Minnie, Matt Garcia's wife, Minnie Garcia, and Amit Esparza, myself, a lot of us. And of course, I'd confront anybody if I felt that wasn't right. At one of the meetings that we had one time in, let's see, McAllen, I think it was Joe Bernal was, I was already divorced, and Joe Bernal was talking. I don't know what the issue was, but I got up and I talked and I said, no, Joe, this and that. Because I had a different view of what he was talking about. I don't remember what the issue was. The only point I'm trying to make is that if I didn't agree, I made it known that I did not agree.
You just spoke up.
And that's the way I was in the Democratic Women. Mm-hmm. So we won from the Anglos and the Democratic Women. That was
well, it sounds like there was a lot of Mexicanas and y'all got together and decided you were going
to
take over.
Right, because we wanted to, yeah, we needed to get up there, you know. Like I said, I had served secretary and this and that. And then I didn't want to become, like I said, because once we went and did the decide who we were going for, well, I wasn't going. In the primaries, I did not want to be hooked to a candidate that they decided on. Mm-hmm. Because they were they had the majority. Because, mm-hmm. Like I said, there was not that many Mexicanos. And then they started coming in. Then with the people that were in office, like Matt Garcia and Joe Bernal, that's when Esther and Minnie came in. But that was way later. And I was in there in the 60s.
What was the first state Democratic convention you went to?
Oh my God, I don't remember.
That's when they had the unit rule and you were forced.
Oh yes, we were forced outside. Yeah, we had the unit rule, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we would go, we had to go along, yeah. Mm-hmm. Majority rule, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when the unit rule was there. And, but I went to a lot of those. A lot of times we had the convention and we won. That was when there was a one party state. They would, and the unit rule, okay, we would win our conventions because of course we had majority. You go to the convention and somebody else would hold a convention, or they didn't even hold a convention. Not in our precinct, because they knew better, because we knew the rules, we knew everything. And I got I was very active in that. Now that I want to take a lot of credit for, because I got the people organized in that area, in the conventions.
How did you do it?
Our Mexicanos and that.
How did you do it?
I did it by calling people.
The phone or in person?
On the phone, if I saw them on the street, if I belong to the church. Wherever you have a natural group, you make a contact. I got all my church people involved in politics. Even the Anglos that had the same thinking as myself, that they were liberals and they wanted to go this way, I would get them involved. So it was a mixture there. It's just like when we won, I mean, we couldn't win by ourselves. Now, we have a lot of Mexicanos, but we have to pull them out to get them to the polls. And this is a thing. Now, voter registration is just great. I mean, there's so many issues. I just want to talk about everything.
Well, this and, time, you know, we don't have to finish everything today. We can do another time.
And you know, like voter registration is very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you had the poll tax.
Yeah, we had.
How did you convince people to pay that money?
We just did because, my thing was, and I, of course, I trained a lot of the girls, ladies, we were girls then, to go. And when we went door knocking, they'd say, oh, no, this and that. And they didn't have, a lot of people didn't have the money because it was $1.75.
So what did you do when they didn't have the money but they wanted to?
Well, we couldn't pay for them.
Yes, you could. You didn't do tamaladas, you didn't do bailes, you didn't sell?
Well, later on.
Yeah,
but at the beginning, we couldn't, you know. And so later on it was done, but it wasn't, they volunteered, and that was like, okay, you volunteer, you're going to, you could pay, you know. It was like we'd give them a donation, and then they bought it on their own, because we couldn't really just buy it out for them. You can't.
Well, and they wouldn't let you be the registrar either.
No.
You couldn't sell it to them.
We couldn't. Yeah. But later on, I got deputized.
How did you do that?
Through the county clerk or county clerk.
Well, yeah, but why did they let you? Somebody had to push or something had to
happen. It was Albert, of course.
Albert.
Jimmy Knight. I think it was Jimmy Knight that was the one. No, it was Anderson. Yeah, and then Jimmy Knight.
Uh-huh.
Of course, Jimmy Knight was a liberal. I knew Jimmy Knight real well. I knew a lot of Anglos, a lot of blacks that were liberal.
Well, is this when Yarbrough was coming up and challenging?
Shivers and later, all that? Yeah, that was later. But right
well,
at the
no,
beginning...
Well, no, it was in the 50s, late 50s.
The late 50s, yeah. Yeah, the poll tax was still here, yeah.
Yeah, no, the poll tax didn't end until 1966.
60, or so, in the
66.
60s. Yeah, 66. So we were doing, we were selling poll taxes.
So
when Albert got into the... When Albert got into county commissioner, that's a key position. But the county commissioners can go in there, and if they don't have an interest, they cannot push the thing. You have to be an organizational man, and you have to be an organizational woman. And I feel that if a county commissioner gets in there, they can deputize people. Now we don't need it because we have Southwest voter registration. But at that time, how were you going to get the people to come in and pay the poll tax if we didn't go door knocking?
Mm-hmm.
See? But we got people to get deputized. And what happened was, Anderson first. He'd say, okay, you're going to get 10 deputies. Okay, we'd get 10 deputies. But we'd get a group like voter registration, and we'd go canvassing. We started canvassing way back when no one knew what canvassing was for the repeal of the poll tax.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd go first to sell the poll tax, then for the repeal. We tried the repeal early, but of course it didn't pass when they put it on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And then until they pronounced it unconstitutional, then that's when we got rid of the poll tax. But at the time, we had to sell the poll taxes. So we had the 10 deputies, and we still got groups to go and do it, get the names, and then we'd funnel them through those deputies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, collect the money, and you have to have your leaders and all that. And I helped in all that. I did a lot of that.
Well, why did Albert choose to run for state representative and not, say, city council or school board or something less that he could win?
Okay. Guy, he just wanted to take a shot at it.
Okay.
And to break the break the ice, make an impact or something. And this was against Fred T. Seligson. He was the worst conservative there is. Anyway, so he went through that against Fred T. Seligson as an independent. And of course, he got in the runoff. And when he got on the runoff, Charlie Leake and Maury Maverick Jr. and Sheridan, Ed Sheridan, came to help Albert. And of course, then they got the other independents together. So they got together, the three independents, which was Anise Zeman. No, it was Fred Zeman. It wasn't Anise. Anise was a professor at St. Mary's University. Fred Zeman, who was running, and he didn't win, of course. Fred Zeman, what was the name of that guy? They have a car lot. They sell car Pontiacs. Oh my God.
Gun?
No. He's not around anymore. Tyndall. Otis Tyndall. He was running as an independent for another place in the legislature. And so they got together, and then Maury and Charlie Leake came in, and Maury Merrick came in and helped them. And of course, we used to have rallies in the different places, and we'd set them up. I'd call and all that, and we'd get everybody that we knew through the Democratic Women, because I was already in the Democratic Women and stuff like that. And my dad, we'd even take my dad. You just grab anybody that you can that'll volunteer. We didn't have enough volunteers, and we really didn't have the organized group that we had later. And we passed out tickets because Tyndall had a car, an old car, that he was raffling. So we'd call the people, and they'd go to the different places, and whoever was sponsoring the rally, the neighborhood rally, well, they would do the calling, see, and they got their people there. And through the executive committee, which is the precinct committee, you know, executive committee, we get people there because the executive committee person was usually the one that was holding the rallies.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use the executive committee in that way, and people do not know the importance of that. That's another thing. Because the executive committee, the person that is a committee man is nominated, and they have to run for office. So if they get it, that means that's the boss of that precinct. That person, if it's an active person, can really build up fires, bonfires, and everything. Can really have it going. But if you don't move, you're just there, and you just wait till then nothing is done. You can do a lot of things. You can have your street fixed, and your light goes out, you have a chuck hole, anything. You can do everything. Just with your little precinct, with that thing. Can you imagine if all precinct committee men were organized like that, what we could do? And I think that's what Southwest Voter Registration has to do. Start finding community people.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can really have a good impact, make an impact. Make them become a part of what is going on, a part of building up the system.
Did Albert win?
Albert didn't win.
Did the others win?
No, none of them won. Then, of course, we had all these rallies, and they were real, real good. It was a beginning, I'll tell you, a beginning of getting in more people, a more general, I mean, a bigger.
Now, what year is this?
This was in 54.
Okay. Eisenhower.
52-54.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we, he didn't win. So then the next time around, he was going to run for the legislature. And of course, I had two kids or three kids at that time, three babies. And I said, no, because at that time they did not pay the legislators. They didn't get, I think, $2 or I don't know what the heck, some ridiculous price. And he was going to neglect his law practice. And I said, let me work and go to it. Oh no, you're not gonna work. I was a housewife, but I was an organizer. Now that gave me time to organize.
He had these attitudes? Or?
Oh yes.
But he didn't mind taking you with him on trips and things.
No, he didn't want you to work. No.
So he didn't want you to be a working woman, but he wanted you to be political.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He'd let me do that, the political, see. But to a certain point, okay. So let me get to it. Anyway, we were talking about that, and he was going to go to legislature. I said, nope. Let me work. He says, no, I don't want you to work. I'm the breadwinner. I'm the man. I have to. You know that machismo, that Mexicano. Now it's different, very different. But some of us just still, you know, got involved. And I wanted to go every place because I just loved it. And so I said, no, why don't you run for something else that provides like a job, you know, something that provides your funds, your money, you can support the family and you can do what you want to. We can still do what we're doing, you know, the organizing and you can provide you can be the breadwinner, I mean, you know, support us, the support, the family support. And so he said, okay, and at that time we'd get together with my compadre, Ruben Munguia.
Yes, the printer.
The printer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we talked about it, and
your compadre is which way? You baptized one of his,
no,
or
he baptized
one of yours?
No, he baptized one of mine.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Magda.
Magda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we'd sit, you know, we'd go weekends and stuff like that, and it was politics. And as you know, well, I'd go with him, we'd go visit the family, and they'd talk politics, and I'd talk politics, and I put in my 2 cents worth, and I said, no, you're not going to. Let me work. And Lalo Solis was there too. Mi compadre Lalo Solis. Él también es compadre.
From which, what did he do?
I don't know what he did.
No, did he baptize one of your kids or
yeah,
you baptized one of his?
No, one of mine.
Oh. But he was Henry B.'s right-hand man, huh?
Oh yeah, later. Uh-huh. But at first it was Ruben, Albert, and Lalo. Lalo. And then of course he started going with, hanging around with Henry. But he was our compadre, both of them were compadre. And so we met at his house, or they'd come to my house. And we'd meet, and I was always there in the group, taking it all in and putting in my 2 cents.
Work. You wouldn't go sit with the women?
No, I never did. And you were at my house several times, and you know I was always in the living room. I wouldn't stay in the kitchen, you know. I like, okay, girl, you get out of here. I stayed there and I sat there, you remember?
Yeah.
In the library. I sat there and I heard everything that went on. That's how I would learn. Mm-hmm. And I was interested. I was interested. And if I hadn't been interested, I would have said, oh, well, you all talk your stuff. Your man talk. And I would get out of there, but I wouldn't, because I was interested in everything that was going on. And from the beginning, I was interested. When I was growing up, I was interested. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was doing something. And then I got focused. I said, okay, this is what you're doing. This is what you like to do. And up to when I retired, I was still doing it. Not politically, but somehow getting involved in certain things that help the people.
You talked them into not running for the legislature, but you talked them into running for?
County Commission.
County Commission. In 56?
Mm-hmm. And of course, he ran this person who was very strong. He was Den Trogert was his name, who was in office, you know. And he heard all the commotion that was going on, Albert announced and all that. And we got organized and we won.
How did you do that?
We got organized by, we would, we met with, we had our meetings with Munguia and Lalo. Of course, that was when we decided that he was going to run for county commissioner. And let me tell you what this was. Lalo's committed. He says, oh, I'll help you, compadre. And Munguia said, I'll help you. I'll help you with the printing. See, I'll put out the material. And of course, I didn't say anything, but I said, well, I'll help with whatever I can. But Albert wasn't still, didn't want me to run the headquarters. You know, he didn't put me in charge of things. I just did what I did.
In spite of him?
Yeah, I just spot here and here and here. When it became down to issues and we had to get the executive committee to the polls or for an issue, Albert would tell me, call the executive committee and not call them. He would say, we have an issue that's coming up and not call them. And I knew everybody by first name. He didn't and I did. I had my list, I'd get them. I was the one that would file them and all that too. You know, I'd file them for office. And of course him and Ruben would pay for the little cards that they would pass at the poll. And they got elected with that because they didn't put out any money. The people didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how we did it. But of course Ruben provided the cards and mm-hmm. at a minimum. I guess just the cost of whatever he mm-hmm. took it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course Albert was the one that provided them. Mm-hmm. And I called the executive committee to go and vote on an issue. And we'd meet because at that time it was at large, the whole thing, the whole county. And now, of course, you have your different districts.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's district, so it's changed a bit. It's changed a bit. But it was so much fun. It was really...
But that must have been an incredible feat, because that's the bay of the poll tax still is in 56.
Right.
Mikado is still not registering. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were afraid, the sheriffs particularly, and the mm-hmm. police and things.
Yeah. Well, see, they could check.
How did you get all this done?
I don't know. I just calling, just hit in the bushes.
Did you all do stuff on the radio, KCOR? And that was the only station
no.
basically going.
Yeah, I estaba Cortez, KCOR. I knew Cortez. Estaba Manuel Leal en otra estación, no me acuerdo cómo se llamaba. I think they were the only two, mm-hmm. KCOR and la de Manuel Leal. And they didn't have too many.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have a media campaign? I mean, it was door knocking?
It was mass door knocking, really. Door knocking, and by meeting in the church and this and that. And all the time in the meetings, okay, we got into I know what it was too, also the GI forum. See, like I said, your natural groups. I belong to the auxiliary, the American GI forum. Estaba Carmen Villegas, creo que se llamaba. She married Richard Casillas,
mm-hmm.
who was the immigration later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Richard Casillas, he was a lawyer also. And we used to meet at my father-in-law's office. And through that, through the GI forum also, you know, there was people, the guys that were in the GI forum. Of course, that was through Dr. Garcia, Hector Garcia. I went to all the conventions in the American GI forum at that time till my divorce and all that. But I was involved in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I held the convention here for the GI Forum. Me and Father Danishek, who was he was the sergeant at arms or something for the whole, every convention and all that. He held that position. That was for life. And we got to meet a lot of people throughout the state because I went to the convention. And the GI Forum was real active throughout the state,
mm-hmm.
doing a lot of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people like yourself that we met then, and so on and so forth. And I met you when you came to my home, of course, through Albert. But I was, like I said, I was always a metiche.
Well, that's still later on, way down the road. So in 56, he wins. What did you do to set an agenda to get the issues? Or did you just leave him alone, let him do what he wanted?
When Albert won for county commissioner, te digo, that's when we really, because let me tell you, he got in there the first day that he went. After that, when we were, the first day after the election, the next time around, when we had to sell poll tax, we were doing it out of his office. Not doing, but I was there, and everybody would bring me the money, and I had to have money for all of his names. And I got them in order and everything. And that was in the old office. But I was, everything came through me. And that's why those are key positions that people do not use to benefit them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about us personally, no. To benefit the general public, our people, you can use those things like that. Mm-hmm. And there, it's not against the law. It's educational. Mm-hmm. It's educational. We were educating the people to go vote. And sometimes it could pay. But later on, okay, and the issues that we use for them to buy them. Hey, we got to get our people in there. Nunca vamos a salir de la misma cosa. Era lo que les decía yo en español. Something they could understand. You know, you have to buy it para que vote por alguien que nos va a ayudar and things like that.
So where did you all get going with the Kennedys?
With the Kennedys, we won conventions. What, is somebody coming here?
Oh, it's my family.
Get us on.
Not the family.
Time flies. Yeah. Well, answer that question and we'll stop it there.
Okay. And the Kennedys?
Because we're about 60. We were going, 156, okay. The term goes to 60.
Okay, to 60. In 60, Albert got elected to the National Convention. Of course, we went precinct convention. And we had our committee man in place. We had committee men in place. They held the conventions. They called their people to get them to the convention. We won the conventions. Because at that time, it wasn't one man, one vote. We had to win the convention. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't win them, you couldn't go to the national. Because you had to have that vote to be able to go.
So we won. Is that the first one that you got to go? First national convention you got to go?
The one that I went to, I wasn't a delegate. Albert wasn't.
But that was the first one.
The first one, yeah. GJ got to go for the Negro. That's when we had the coalition, see, because Albert was already county commissioner. And we were organizing all the time, all this time, organizing. Through the committee, executive committee, through the barrio, through Democratic Women, through GI Forum, throughout the state with the GI Forum. And anytime we needed something with somebody else, they llamabas a fulano, a Bob Sanchez and McKellen, a fulano and Peña and Laredo and so on and so forth. You know, just we kept touch like that. You know, mm-hmm. with your key people in different places, different areas, mm-hmm. just like you do with the Southwest voter registration. Mm-hmm. And so he went to the convention then, mm-hmm. and that's how we. Of course, he got the liberals. We were with, and it took that other groups to be able to do it. It took the labor, it took the blacks, and it took the independent liberals and the Mexicano groups to get the people to go to the convention, mm-hmm. to get elected. And what happened was that we went to the state, we won the state conventions, and Lyndon Johnson was a favorite son, mm-hmm. a candidate. And of course, at that time, you elected him at the convention, not at the polls, because it wasn't the one, this hadn't come about at that time. So Albert got to go to the convention because Lyndon released them after he did not get it in the first round. I was there when they had the voting for them. I didn't go to the immediate convention, but later on when they had the nominations, that's when I went. and he did not win the first go round. Adlai Stevenson got a standing ovation. Oh, it was the most beautiful thing, with balloons and everything, more so than any of them. But of course, Kennedy's won. But at the state, Lyndon Johnson and our group nominated Albert to go, our group, to go in, because he was, Albert got nominated to the convention because he was committed for Lyndon Johnson, G.J. Sutton for the blacks. I believe it was, for labor. I remember the guy from labor. I can't remember his name. And then the independent liberal, no me acuerdo quién era.
Maury Maverick?
And I'm Maury. Maury Maverick, I guess. I guess so. Yeah, I'm Maury. Y el otro era el head de labor de aquí, de San Antonio. Era el otro, pero no me acuerdo su nombre. Mm. Anyway, they're the four that went from San Antonio, from Bexar County.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was at the convention, and he met Benin Williams. I have a picture of him there with where we were together when he came to San Antonio later on. And he was in the minorities group in the issues for, ¿cómo se llaman? You put in...
Platform. For the platform.
Yeah, for the platform. And Albert talked to him, and he made friends with him and all that, and then he came to San Antonio later. But since they were there, and Albert called Dr. Hector Garcia, so that he could have their support, Chicanos,
mm-hmm.
See? Because nobody was...
Was that the beginning of the Viva Kennedy Clubs?
Yes.
So Albert was undoing that?
Yeah, Albert was a delegate, see? Mm-hmm. And with Menon Williams, okay, and some other people, but Menon Williams was a key, okay. And then he said, he called Dr. Garcia, and he called whoever was the, I don't remember who was the head of LULAC was. He called them too, and say, hey, I'm at the convention, and what do you want? You know, I'm here, will you, can we go with the clubs? We, you know, because we were in the GI Forum, he was in LULAC also. And so, yeah, they gave him the go-ahead. And so he did, but he contacted them too. He didn't just say, I'm going to do anything. Me van a seguir. No, nothing like that. Porque así no se hacen las cosas. Yo lo voy a hacer. Y lo que me siga la gente. No, let them know what's going on. I mean, make them a part of. Mm-hmm. If you don't make them a part of, se fregó la cosa. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then he called them and they agreed, whatever. So then he got contacted by, I think it was Bobby Kennedy. And he met them there and they had the meetings and so on and so forth.
Now, was Albert also running for re-election in 1960?
Mm, sí, me parece que sí.
How many terms did he serve as commissioner?
16 years. That's
four terms. Okay.
Four years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to have to stop the interview because I got here late. And
yo me desvalago para acá y para
that's
allá.
That's okay. We're giving you an excuse to come see you again.
Andale. And you tell me, talk about this particular issue and we'll talk just about that.
All right. Well, at least we got up to 1960 on the beginning of the Viva Kennedy Club, so we'll pick up there a little later on. Thank you for your time, Odita.
Ábrele, I'm sorry. Ahí tiene la lavita.
Oh. But let me move this chair.
Hello.
This is my wife, Gloria.
Hi, how are you, Gloria? Very nice.
This is Olga Peña.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Olga.
Mucho
how
gusto.
Are you?
Gloria Garza Gutierrez.
Gracias, gracias.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
How do you keep up with this stuff?
Well, I just kind of go along with the program.